Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Wow, well, I just want to say thank you to you guys for all your support, listening. We are past 560,000 downloads of the podcast. Yes, that just blows my mind and just so appreciative. I hope you enjoy the shows and you were able to share them with friends and family. Thank you. And I hope you're safe today if you're on the East Coast with this crazy snow. Some of us got 2 feet and some got 1 inch, so somewhere in between. I just hope that you're safe and warm, and don't try to go out if you don't have to. Well, today I'm speaking with a wonderful artist, photographer, filmmaker. I would say she's an activist, too, based on what she's doing, Stacey Muhammad. Good morning, Stacey.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you caught my eye because I saw the trailer for Redemption for Color Boys.
Right.
And I was like, ooh, who, what, okay, let me see, who's this? What's this doing? This good stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a short clip, but it was enough to grab my attention, and the actors were good, and I just was really intrigued. So why don't you tell the audience what Redemption for Color Boys is about?
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Redemption for Color Boys is a short film. It was a short film, but it actually now is a web series that follows the life of Benjamin Boyd Sr., who upon release from prison comes home with a desire to reunite his family, to rekindle his relationship with his wife, and to reassume his role as father to his 15-year-old daughter and 20-year-old son.
So, wow.
It really looks at what happens in homes often when parents are removed because of incarceration and
mm-hmm.
when children, usually young boys, have to assume a level of responsibility that they're not quite ready to assume. So I think that, you know, this population of children oftentimes is kind of lost. You know, they're as lost in the system as their parents are. So
yes.
That's just one of the things I wanted to explore in this particular narrative.
Say that again?
I said that's what I wanted to explore in this particular narrative series. Hello?
Hey, Stacey, I'm sorry. Somehow I got disconnected from my own show. Are you still there? Okay, I hope she calls back in. Stacey, I see you in the chat room. Call back in. I think I got disconnected or you got disconnected. But anyway, an important thing to note is I just want to read some criminal justice facts. Today, the U.S. is 5% of the world population and has 25% of the world's prisoners. Also, African Americans now constitute nearly 1 million of the total 2.3 million incarcerated population. African Americans are incarcerated nearly six times the rate of whites. I think this is Stacey. Somehow I think we both got disconnected. Sorry about that, audience. Stacey, is that you? Hey, Stacey, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, somehow,
okay,
I don't know, we both got technology,
know.
You know, gotta
right.
love it.
Right.
But I was just trying to let the audience know some just statistics about African Americans being incarcerated six times the rate of whites, that nearly 1 million of the total, they're 1 million of the total 2.3 million incarcerated population.
Yeah.
And also, based on the Urban Institute Justice Policy Center, some of the issues faced by male prisoners returning into society, having to deal with finding a place to live,
mm-hmm.
Dealing with family members and community members who are maybe doing illegal activity. They're trying to stay straight. And the recidivism rate is very high. Maybe within 4 months they've either messed up their parole or committed another type of crime and are reincarcerated, or within a year reincarcerated. So did you do any research in terms of what happens to young men when they come back into the communities after coming from prison?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, quite a bit. I mean, you know, the initial idea for For Color Boys as in terms of a series was to do a documentary web series that looks at the ways in which black men in particular, are targeted in this society. So, of course, the prison industrial complex is, you know, high on that list, if not first. You know, so I think that part of the problem is that, you know, we have a lot of conversations, but we have them out of context. So when Michelle Alexander says in A New Jim Crow that the war on drugs was, you know, started in black communities and Latino communities when drug crimes were on the decline, then I think it's really necessary to look at, you know, the entire picture, you know, why this is happening, who's doing this, for what reason, privatized prison industrial complex, and who's benefiting from that. So I think that the documentary component is necessary to provide the context, and then the narrative component, you know, it kind of like crafts these stories from what's happening, you know, which the documentary will kind of look at the why of it. But, yeah, we definitely did a tremendous amount of research in terms of what's happening and why brothers are targeted and going into prison, you know, why this is like the new chattel slavery and why.
Yes, I had Michelle Alexander on the show, and we talked about the New Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we did talk about, and I'll be devil's advocate here, I mean, people commit crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Do they not need to be locked up? I mean, are they there for no reason at all? Are they trumped up charges? There are black men who have committed crimes. Should they not go to jail? The question, though, is the skewed nature of the arrest, I think, is the issue, and the number compared to other people who are committing crimes but not being arrested. So there are other people other than black people committing crimes in the world, you know, and in terms of just America as a whole, that statistic I mentioned about, you know, we're only 5% of the world's population, but we have 25% of the world's prisoners. So what, are Americans criminals, you know, even on a macro level? Are Americans prisoners? You know, that's another question. I think we have a caller here. Let me bring in this caller. You're calling from 267 area code. Did you have a question? Hi. Okay, maybe they just want to listen. That's fine. Thank you for calling in. Sometimes people are shy. So, I mean, what do you say to people when they maybe come to you and say, well, you know, black men commit crimes? I mean, What are we supposed to do with them? How are we supposed to handle it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that what you said is correct in that, you know, America is a criminal nation. I mean, we have the largest or the highest incarceration rate in the world. You know, so this isn't about crime or criminality. I mean, I think it's about the fact that black people have been demonized and criminalized to justify treating us criminally since we were brought here. So I think that, you know, slavery was a criminal institution. You know, I mean, escaping from slavery became a crime, you know. I mean, so I think that, you know, oftentimes, you know, we're demonized in media in order to justify.
Well, I mean,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, to justify what's going on and to
get
that chattel slavery. I mean, it's the new chattel slavery. I had Dr. Khalil Gibran Muhammad on. He's now the director of the Schomburg Center up in New York, and he has a book called The Condemnation of Blackness, and he talks about how statistics from, you know, way back early 1900s started being, you know, 1920s, started being used to demonize and make blackness a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think crime, you think black. I mean, it's similar to right now. If you say welfare, what picture comes to people's head?
Right,
welfare
absolutely.
Comes to people's head. I mean, even in my own head is a black woman with a kid.
Right, when there
you know
are more
I mean?
White women on welfare than black women, right, yeah.
There are more, and there are more women, okay, on welfare. So it's not only a racist system, but it's a sexist system,
absolutely.
Welfare, I believe is, that you are sexist toward the women and also sexist toward men because you are not providing support to men.
That's
so, for example, let's go back to your character. He gets out of jail. When I had Michelle on, in her book, she talks about he's not eligible for public housing. So where is he supposed to sit?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are so many issues. I mean, just inherent in the criminal justice system is a tremendous amount of criminality. You know, so you have a large population of black men who are in prison for nonviolent offenses who spend a tremendous amount of time in those prisons for first offense nonviolent acts. You know, as opposed to their white counterparts that don't get that type of sentencing. So I think that, you know, oftentimes we allow other people to kind of frame the debate for us. We allow other people to kind of frame the conversation when at the root of this, we're dealing with a nation with a criminal past, we're dealing with being inside of a nation that has long vilified and demonized and criminalized our people. But oftentimes the conversation, particularly when we're talking to black youth, it begins and ends with them. So although they see the drug dealer on the corner, they also have to understand who put the drug dealer there, why the drug dealer is there, who's benefiting from that drug dealer being there, and how their lives are being affected by the environment that was intentionally created and crafted for their demise. So if we don't have those conversations in context with black youth, you know, we're kind of re-demonizing and recriminalizing the population of people that we say we want to help.
Well, I think the key point you talked about is in the context, but also connecting with the youth. And I always advocate on the show connecting with the youth and trying to reach out to them, because we're complaining about them, but are you reaching out to them?
Right.
I mean, they need direction. I think we have another caller here.
Okay.
Good morning. You're calling from 202 area code?
Yes. My name is Kimberly, and I work in mental health. Hello, Stacey. I wanted to know if while you were doing your research and the filming, if you found that there was a mental health component to this whole piece, while the for the children of these people who are incarcerated, and then when black men come back into the community, what is the mental health connection that you might have observed as you were doing your work?
Thanks for calling. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, what's revealed later on in the series is that Benjamin Sr., the father, is suffering from post-incarceration syndrome. So that's a very real issue, you know, where men come out of prison, men and women come out of prison, and there's a tremendous amount of trauma that's associated with what they experienced in prison. So, you know, the mental health component, I did a film called Out of Our Right Minds, Trauma, Depression, and the Black Woman a few years ago, where we really delved into the mental health issue and a lot of the issues in terms of having this really open, honest conversation in the black community, excuse me, and how that connects to post-traumatic slavery syndrome that Dr. Joy Leary really goes into. You know, so I think a lot of times when we're having mental health conversations, we have to be a lot more open and honest about it, and then look at how our overall trauma as a people informs this individual trauma that we're dealing with in our lives.
Definitely. Thank you so much, caller, for calling in. I think we have another caller here. Let's see. You're calling from 347 area code?
It's so
serious. Hi, did you have a question this morning?
Okay, now let me ask you a question. When you eat when you eat something from the Chinese restaurant, what do you usually?
Sesame chicken.
I'm sorry, honey. We couldn't hear you very well. You need to speak up. I'm sorry. Speak up. We couldn't hear your question.
Is that what you want?
Okay, I think he's kind of fuzzy, but maybe he'll call back.
Okay.
So I think the issue also connects with the other caller mentioned, the children. I mean, you hear the statement, hurt people,
absolutely.
You know? And if you're hurting, if you're already in a state of pain, you may not even know you're in a state of pain because you haven't felt well.
Right.
You know, it's like somebody who smokes cigarettes. I mean, do you remember what it felt like before you smoked cigarettes?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get off a cigarette, your skin is clear, you're breathing, you know, your lungs are able to take in more air. So I think starting with the youth who may be in pain, may not have supports for numerous reasons, you know. I mean, wow, I'm sorry, I'm about to go on a tirade, but let me just say, if people aren't caring for themselves, how can they care for you or others?
Right.
And when I see the young people lashing out, I mean, now we have, I mean, maybe it's more in the news, young women more lashing out at each other as society, slicing, dicing each other up, you know, like you would think would be a typical male crime. You know, where is this anger coming from? Well, anger is the other side of sadness, yes? So then you have this picture that you created showing the father coming back in. The son is angry.
Yeah.
Rightfully
absolutely.
So.
Right, absolutely.
You know, rightfully so. And then the daughter, I'm not sure if you're going to delve into that. What can you give us any, you know, hints of what you might delve into with the daughter's experience with the father?
Yeah, I mean, there's been just a number of issues with the family in general. I don't want to reveal too much in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, of course.
Series. But, yeah, definitely, just a lot of unresolved trauma, you know, that I think a lot of young people deal with when parents are removed from the family because of incarceration. So if it's anger, if it's feelings of regret or embarrassment, which is what the daughter is dealing with, just feelings of embarrassment, you know, all of these issues definitely need to be addressed. But I agree with you. I think that, you know, black youth are bombarded with a tremendous amount of issues today, and so much of this trauma has gone unaddressed. And then, unfortunately, again, these conversations begin and end with what's wrong with them and what's happening to them. But all the conversations are had out of context. We're not being completely openly, sometimes brutally honest with them in terms of, you know, why they're targeted. I mean, look at what's happening in Chicago right now. I mean, it's absolutely heartbreaking that so many young black people are being murdered, and yet we're still having conversations about whether or not there's gang affiliation, as if it begins and ends with that. It begins with an unaddressed trauma. And as Dr. Joy Leary said, until we deal with that trauma experience as a people, we're going to keep having these conversations over and over again and not getting to real solutions.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Chicago because, you know, we talk about Sandy. And audience, I'm just no disrespect at all. As a parent, I am pained. I could not look at the pictures of the kids. I was like, okay, it's one thing to go and, like, blow up some other adults, but then you start killing children.
Yeah.
I mean, just innocence. I want to just say that first. I was pained.
Yeah.
But why are we, like, as a nation, oh, my God, kids got killed in San, what? Kids every day.
Oh, yeah.
More people in Philadelphia, I think Philadelphia is on the top list of gun violence, black-on-black crime.
Mm-hmm.
Young people being killed every day.
Mm-hmm.
We are not up in arms. Nobody's holding vigils for these young black bodies,
right?
Latino bodies. What is wrong with that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because it's okay to let the goons kill each other.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Stacey, I don't know. What's your opinion about
that? Yeah, I mean, and I think that's part of having or allowing someone else to kind of frame the conversation for us. I mean, again, you know, there is no phrase that's coined. There's no white-on-white crime phrase that's been coined in the way in which a phrase has been coined to identify black-on-black crime. You know, white men aren't targeted and profiled because of their violence and gun activity. And if we look at not just the history of this country, but what's happening.
Well, let me just say, I think white men are targeted in, like, you think, when you think white crime, I'll just say that statement, you think serial killer. You think about the guy who took the kid in the bunker. He was ex-military and, you know, a loaner, so on and so forth like that.
I mean, that
you think about maybe
mind.
Domestic violence. Right,
that
I'm
may
just
come
saying.
To our
Let's,
mind, but right. It's certainly not presented in media as a white problem in the way in which,
right.
You know, black crime, quote-unquote black crime, is presented and articulated through mainstream media and amongst our people as a problem in the black community. You know, so even
mm-hmm.
though those things may come to our mind, most people aren't having conversation about there being an epidemic amongst white men when it comes to gun violence. I mean, and if that's not something that we're absolutely positively sure has been an issue since we've been here in this country,
yes.
You know, then we're kind of delusional. So I think, again, as Dr. Amos Wilson taught brilliantly and masterfully about it, you know, this is really about the creating of the black criminal in order to continue to justify treating our people criminally. You know, so if there's this fixation on what we're doing and this avoidance of the realities of what they did and continue to do to our people, then, you know, we keep having these conversations that go around and around in a circle that begin and end with people who are victims and never get to the root causes of those problems.
Well, a couple of things I want to touch on is in terms of creating an environment where it perpetuates and recidivism continues so that, you know, the prison industrial complex will keep going and make money for corporations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's talk about personal responsibility. Let's talk about a larger economic issue of there are some people, philosophers and economists, to believe that there is a need to create the poor.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a constant need for the extremely wealthy to maintain the poor so that they will do certain types of jobs.
Sure.
And then we can go back to the mental health issue. I had Terry Williams on.
Mm-hmm.
She has a book called Black Pain.
Absolutely.
And our non-vocalization of depression and mental health issues and post-traumatic stress in the black community and looking down on somebody who tries to go seek help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also, and then again, in context, if you're in a war zone,
mm-hmm.
your behavior is different than somebody who's in a healthy, happy, you know, green environment with fruits and vegetables and, you know, good schools and books and your mind and body are being, you know, tapped into and expanded in your paradigm shift.
Sure,
so
right.
A behavior again, going back to your word context, has to be looked at. That that behavior that this young person is acting out may be odd to someone else, but that's a protective mode because they're in a state of war.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, this is a war zone, and I think that what's unfortunate about the time that we live in now is that it's so much more difficult to detect. You know, there is so much focus on, well, if you just do the quote-unquote right thing, then you're guaranteed a particular type of life. You know, I mean, and we see examples.
But you need resources. You need resources. You need support. Even as an adult now, I think about the idea of having a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a mentor in your filmmaking, in your photography, your artist, somebody you looked up to who you could go talk to on a regular basis that said, Stacy, you're doing great. Well, maybe you want to try this to inch ahead, or did you think about trying this lens out? I mean, you would constantly need to be somebody, a catalyst or something to be a catalyst to and kind of push us and know that we have our back. Did you have somebody, a mentor in your life that helped you?
I had one. I always say that Professor Halle Jarima, who did the film Sankofa, at Howard University.
Yes.
I don't know if he knows how much he changed my life. Because when I first got into film, I attended, you know, one workshop after another, and you had black filmmakers and people who had supposedly made it. Telling young black filmmakers, you know, you need to write this type of story in order to make it in Hollywood. So meeting Professor Jarima and attending his classes, screenwriting and directing classes, it definitely gave me the idea that I could be the type of filmmaker that I wanted to be. I could tell the type of stories that were important to me because that's what he was doing and that's what he was teaching us to do. And now I think, you know, I regard Tim Reed as a mentor. And it's funny because when I met him, he actually reached out to me on Facebook and asked me to come to Virginia, see his studio, speak with his students about my work. And he said, you know, no one has ever asked me to be a mentor before. So I think there's a wealth of information and resources. I mean, with the Internet, with Facebook and Twitter, you know, the possibility of reaching out to a Tim Reed or a Robert Townsend or a Halle Jarima, it exists now in ways that it didn't exist before. So there's a tremendous amount of wisdom and mentorship that's available for young filmmakers and artists if we reach out and ask for it.
Well, I think you were working with someone with working with the youth and using film. I think it's so important. The arts is a huge part of my life growing up. I think it definitely saved my life. I went to an elementary school. We were doing dance and theater and visual art and singing, and it just really, you know, that it just connected to me, and then I went on to theater. I think that children learn in different ways. I mean, it's a proven fact that some people are visual, some people are auditory, some people have different ways of learning. And I think catching the kids young in elementary school, and I'll give you a perfect example why it's so important. Don't wait until they're in high school. It has to happen in elementary school. My daughter was in elementary school, and a young boy tried to strangle her. First grade.
Wow.
First grade, his mental health appeared. So I have to disagree with you, Stacey, when you say it's sometimes hard to identify. It's there. We're in denial.
Mm-hmm.
We are in denial about the problem. He came from an abusive home. And in first grade, it already started showing himself. He ended up getting kicked out of the school. But I was like, it's either him or my kid, and I don't need to get a call that my kid was strangled in the middle of this playground.
Mm-hmm.
And the principal told me, oh, well, you know, kids play.
Right.
This is what the Kim principal. I said, no, my daughter showed me that the little boy put his hands, two hands around her neck.
Uh-huh.
That's not playing.
Right.
You play, you push, you take the backpack, I pull your hair, maybe I mess up with your lunch, I spill your juice over. I'm not strangling you.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I think we're in denial as a culture, and also schools don't have the resources. They don't have enough counselors or social workers, psychologists in the environment to say, you know what, Jane is... that's like too far to the left. She's acting way out. Or, you know, John is, you know, doing that. That's, yeah, we gotta get that in check. There's a pattern of behavior, of negative acting out behavior that needs to be caught. And then providing that child with the resources, because they could be steered to the positive.
Yeah, but I mean,
we wait until they're in high school, you know.
It's okay. We know that the education system in and of itself is very problematic. And I think for people of African descent, who are comfortable with their children being educated in schools that provide absolutely very little, if any, you know, truth about their culture, their history, their experience as a people, you know, it's very problematic. I mean, you know, Amos Wilson said that, you know, education is for the securing of a nation, of a people. And I think that part of our issue, part of the issue that we're looking at in our community, oftentimes, and we've seen recently when the young black boy was arrested in school, you know, or handcuffed because of something that happened on a playground. So even at those very young ages, you know, our children are vilified and criminalized. The cops are called in, they're handcuffed and taken down to a police station for something that really could be resolved in a principal's office. So there's so many issues in the educational system. And, yeah, there's quite a bit of mental health issues as well, but that's to be expected when you're dealing with people who have the level of unresolved trauma that we have as a community.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Stacey, it was a pleasure speaking with you, and I'm sorry because you're doing such great work. It has ignited, you know, like Pat, you know, you just let me go on a rant there. But check her out, StaceyMuhammad.com. Follow her on Twitter, at StaceyMuhammad. Support her Redemption for Colored Boys web series, and also she's doing a documentary. Support black people doing positive things, highlighting the truth about what's going on in our communities. Stacey, you have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. I know we had another call. We tried to call in briefly. Let me see. You calling from 347. Honey, you still there? Can you hear me? Okay, I guess he fell off. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. You can follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Stay tuned. I'll be speaking with author Tanya Bianc about her book Undaunted, dealing with women in the military. So call in for that in about 5 minutes. Have a wonderful Saturday.
My daughter Cara came back from Iraq a few weeks ago. I'm so proud of her. She served and came back in one piece. But something was off. She was different. Distant. My wife told me not to push the issue, but I'm her dad.
You may not know what to say, but we can help start the conversation. Visit supportyourvet.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.